This is Marathon Training Academy, episode 177.
This episode of the MTA podcast is brought to you by Jabra. They make the Sport Pulse, which is a wireless pair of earbuds that have in-ear heart rate monitors so you can improve your training. And as an MTA listener, you can get exclusive offers and product discounts when you sign up to their newsletter at jabra.com/MTA. Jabra, this is where it starts.
Welcome to the Marathon Training Academy podcast, where we provide information and motivation to help you conquer the distance. In this episode, we explain terminology, lingo, and slang used in the running world so that you can be in the know. This is actually part two of our running terminology episode. And to get expert help and support in training for your first marathon or half marathon, setting a new personal best, and becoming a marathon machine, find out about Academy membership and our awesome online community when you visit marathontrainingacademy.com. So for those who are veteran podcast listeners, you will notice that Trevor usually reads the intro, and today I'm doing it. Unfortunately, Trevor has taken ill, and his voice is not what it usually is.
This is true. So, Angie, you better not sit too close to me.
I know. I've been trying to avoid getting breathed on all week since I have the New Jersey Marathon this coming Sunday, and I definitely don't want to get sick before that.
So I might do minimal talking on this episode, but that's okay because we're going to be defining terms, and we'll leave all the heavy lifting to Angie on this.
Well, thanks a lot.
So at the time of this recording, Angie, the London Marathon just wrapped up last weekend, right?
Yes, it did. There was approximately 39,700 runners who participated, and it was an exciting event. The winners for the women, Jemima Sumgong of Kenya, and it was interesting because during the race, I don't know exactly what mile, she banged her head as a group approached a aid station. It was kind of a pack, and about three of them went down. Wow. And it looks like she hit her head pretty hard because she kind of kept wincing and touching the spot for a little while afterward. But she ended up rejoining the leading pack and took her first London title in 2 hours, 22 minutes, and 58 seconds. And then Eliud Kipchoge of Kenya was the returning winner. He won in 2 hours, 3 minutes, and 5 seconds, which was only 8 seconds outside of a world record. So that would be the second fastest marathon time ever run, and it was a new course record there in London. So very exciting event. Sadly, there was one fatality during the race. An Army captain, David Seath, he was only 31, had a cardiac arrest about 3 miles from the finish line, and even after receiving immediate medical attention, he later died at the hospital. So that was very sad. I believe he was running for charity. And sometimes you would never guess. I mean, this man was very physically fit, you know, and obviously no one would have suspected. So, yeah, definitely we want to offer condolences to his family and friends, you know, really reeling from this event. We'd like to say congratulations to Sarah. She ran the Boston Marathon and then turned around and ran the London Marathon. So both of those races are approximately a week apart, so very exciting for her to be able to do two big marathons, and I'm sure it took a lot out of her body, so we're very proud of her as well.
Yes.
Also, congratulations to Academy member Jennifer, who finished her first half marathon, and also congratulations to Academy member Marie, who ran her first marathon at Big Sur. I'd like to say congratulations to my coaching client Jill, who ran her first 50K, the Snake River Hop in Washington. She says, thank you, Angie, for yet again helping me get across another finish line. And this was her preparation for a 50-miler in just a few weeks.
Wow, that's exciting. Good job, Jill.
That's right. Also, congratulations to my coaching client, Sandy, for running her first 50K. It was a 5-mile loop course with some challenging hills. And she says, yesterday's 50K was quite an experience, and I'm so happy I did it. Thanks, you guys, for the well wishes yesterday. I read them after the run, and it reminded me of why I love this group so much. MTA has changed my perceptions regarding what I can do. I plan on being strong and fit as I turn 50 in September. If you would have told me a couple years ago I would be thinking about running 30 and 50 miles at a time, I would have said, no way.
That's right. Changing perceptions is what we specialize in here.
One runner at a time.
We also specialize in deep, raspy voices.
And lots of nose blowing.
Which will be edited out, the nose blowing part.
And since we're on a roll with 50Ks here, also congratulations to Tiffany, who ran her first 50K in California. She says, I'm still on such a high from yesterday. My first 50K in the most gorgeous course imaginable, even with the crazy climbs and elevation gains. I felt strong all the way through. Today my legs feel great and my heart is full. Ultras have definitely stolen my heart and soul. Now I'm looking for the next one. Thank you, Angie, for your coaching and support through all of it.
Awesome. We have a rash of 50Ks in the group.
That's right. I think it must be catching or addictive or something.
Yes, that's awesome.
This next message comes from Axel. He says, hello, Trevor and Angie. I wanted to write a few words to acknowledge the huge impact of your podcast and your book in my decision to keep running. I live in Colombia and am 44 years old, and I started running 2 years ago. I bought your book because I was curious about how people prepare for a marathon, but convinced that I would never finish any marathon. And now I am here celebrating this huge achievement. I just finished my first marathon in Santiago, Chile, and my wife finished her first half marathon, inspired by your book and your amazing podcast. Thank you guys, and keep inspiring people and changing lives.
Well, that's so cool to see that, you know, somebody in Colombia listened to the show, got a copy of your book, ran his first marathon, inspired his wife. Thank you so much, Axel, for sending in that report. And probably a lot of you didn't even know that Angie has written a book.
I didn't even know.
Well, it's been so long ago.
I know.
Like 5 years ago. But yeah, she has a book called The MTA Official Guide to Running Your First Marathon. It's about 160 pages. And if you're interested in it, you can go to mtaofficialguide.com.
It's an ebook, I should add.
Right.
Or available in the audio edition.
Yes. So proud of all you out there who are getting the advice you hear from this podcast and from others and just implementing it, taking action, and seeing breakthroughs in your health and fitness and your running. That's why we're here. We're going to get into our feature segment now on running terminology. We'll be focusing on technical terms that pertain to injury and injury prevention, and also then we'll get into slang, which is my favorite part.
Too bad your voice isn't good. You won't be able to make any comments, right?
Yes. I might slip a few in here once in a while. My voice is fine. It's just more rich than usual.
Okay.
Yes, you probably find it very attractive, don't you, honey?
Yes, that low gravelly voice does it for me.
But I do love words, and every industry has its own trade lingo, it seems. Running is no exception. There's a whole mountain of words that you encounter when you get into running that it really helps to have a handle on, just to navigate your way through it easier and to better talk like a runner. We're going to go ahead and get into that right now. So, Angie, have you ever had PF?
Yes.
ITBS?
Yes.
SFX?
No.
PS?
No.
Chub rub?
Oh, yeah.
Runner's trots?
I can't think of any instances.
So take it away. Let's talk about injury and injury-related words.
So something that's very common when we're dealing with injuries is to see the term RICE, or R-I-C-E. And that generally stands for rest, ice, compression, and elevation, which is a good way to treat certain injuries.
Which you probably knew about as a nurse prior to becoming a running coach.
Oh, definitely. It's not something that's unique to the running community, for sure. But it's one of those frontline measures in helping to deal with injuries, prevent them from getting worse, and things like that. Something else that can occur is a stitch, which is usually referring to a side cramp or a side ache, I've heard them called before. So that uncomfortable stabbing pain that you get in your side when you're running that sometimes can really put a halt to what you're doing. Then there's the runner's trots. And this would be gastrointestinal problems on the run resulting in diarrhea. So something that is not pleasant to deal with.
As a new runner, you get to experience these things. You learn to take care of all your bathroom stops before you go out on your run because running is not easy on your stomach.
And then there's still no guarantees. Sometimes the jostling motion of running can just get things going again, and that can result in code brown. This is basically desperately in need of a place to have a bowel movement, and it may or may not end in an unfortunate accident. I remember early in your running career, you came back from a run without your shirt.
I knew you would say that.
I'm sorry, it's just such a great illustration. But I've known people who have sacrificed socks before. I actually like to carry a little baggie of toilet paper or Kleenex in just like a small Ziploc bag, because you just never know when you're out there for a long time. And if you run in the country like I do, not near any bathrooms, just sometimes nature calls.
We should have a whole episode dedicated to runner trots, like have people on to share their own story. Spare no details. Well, the runner's trots episode.
That may result in the runner's vomiting episode.
But probably runners can talk about this comfortably among each other, even at dinner time.
I think it's kind of a badge of honor if you've had some of these things happen to you. You know, like, it would be embarrassing to the rest of the world, but, you know, we understand.
Yes. And if you want, go to Google and type in runner's trots and click on Google Images.
You may not want to do that before you're going to eat or something.
There's this poor guy. It's kind of become a meme now around the internet, but this poor guy, he looks like an elite runner, and he was having a bad day, and it was a crowded course, and a bunch of people are looking at him, and below the waist, it was just devastation.
I mean, can you imagine trying to live that down? I feel so sorry for him. But I do remember when we interviewed Camille Heron back, a long time ago,
yeah,
about elite runners and how, you know, the desperate measures that sometimes you just don't stop if you're really trying to go for a win or a specific time.
Well, she won the Route 66 Marathon in Tulsa wearing a Spider-Man costume and just volunteered the information to the press and everybody that she had to go, so she just went in her costume and kept running.
Right.
You do what you got to do to win.
I'm guessing that costume probably was ended up in the garbage. Another thing that might be unpleasant, and typically women deal with it most, is called a fitness leak. And this would be a urine leakage caused by high-impact activities, and it's said to affect around 25% of women. So just the jostling can cause leakage, which is very unpleasant. Mm. Another unpleasant and painful thing is chafing. That's where an irritation or rubbing of the skin caused by skin-to-skin or skin-to-fabric content. And that's made worse usually by the presence of moisture, of course, sweat and heat. And sometimes you don't realize how bad it is till you get into the shower later. And then there's that scream or gasp moment where you realize how bad the damage was. Chub rub would be thigh chafing from the skin rubbing together. So sometimes you have to find a better pair of running shorts, ones that don't ride up or rub so much, or, you know, put some kind of body glide or something like that on there.
I love that word, chub rub.
Something else would be a stress fracture. You might see it abbreviated SFX, and that's basically a hairline crack in the bone. And of course, if you have a stress fracture, you're going to need to take some rest, of course, be evaluated by a medical professional, and you'll have to take time off for low-impact activity until that heals. Another injury would be tendonitis. This would be inflammation of a tendon. And of course, this can happen various places, usually in your lower body, with running. Then there's plantar fasciitis, or abbreviated PF. This involves pain and inflammation of a thick band of tissue called the plantar fascia, which runs across the bottom of your foot, connects your heel bone to your toes.
How many runners have experienced that?
I don't know the exact numbers, but it probably impacts 20 to 30% of runners at some point during their running career. It's a common one for sure. Then there's piriformis syndrome, and it's often abbreviated PS. That's irritation of the sciatic nerve caused by compression of the nerve within the buttock, but by the piriformis muscle. So it's literally a pain in the butt if you have this. Hmm. And very uncomfortable often to sit. Then there's iliotibial band syndrome, or ITBS, or you'll see IT, pain, things like that. This is inflammation of the iliotibial band, which runs on the outside of the leg from the hip to just below the knee. And this most often occurs where the band crosses over the outside of the knee and also at the hip. So very often this causes lateral knee pain, so pain to the outside of that knee.
I've felt it. It's not fun.
No, it isn't. Then there's runner's knee, or this is actually called patellofemoral syndrome. That's when your kneecap or your patella is rubbing on the front of the thigh bone or your femur, causing pain under or around the kneecap. This can be caused by overuse, doing too much too soon, osteoarthritis, insufficient muscle development, things like running on slanted pavement, improper alignment, and worn out shoes can all make this worse.
There are so many things that can go wrong when you run.
Yes, there are. But there's so many things that can go right, too, so that's why we do it.
Yes.
Then there's black toenails. This is bruising to the nail bed caused by excessive pressure or pounding during running, often during running downhill. The toenails often sore post-race, and you'll probably eventually end up losing the nail.
How many have you lost?
I don't know. Dozens. I think
you only have 10 toes. You know that, right?
No, I mean, I probably get 2 bruised toenails per marathon, which end up eventually getting lost. Well, they turn black first, which is not very attractive during the summer, of course. And then, yeah, they end up falling off. And then a new victim grows in its place. Some people, you know, can do everything, you know, wearing bigger shoes, different socks, and they still get black toenails. So I think some people's toenails just kind of like curve up and, you know, have problems with that.
It's like they're saying, here I am, punish me.
Exactly. If you're an ultra runner and you deal with this, you may just end up having your toenails removed.
Like Marshall Ulrich.
Yep.
Everybody I've ever told that to has been disturbed by it.
Voluntarily having your toenails removed. Yeah, that is, it's kind of disturbing looking. But, you know, if your job basically is to run and you're constantly having toe pain.
Yeah.
You know, I can see.
I mean, ultra runners understand. Typically non-runners, they think it's just...
I understand. I've thought about having my toenails removed before. Then there's bloody nipples. This is chafing to men's nipples that cause bloody patches on their shirt. And it usually seems like the man is wearing white when they get bloody nipples.
Yeah, just Google that one too.
Very uncomfortable.
I've actually never had that happen to me.
That's good.
My nipples are strong.
They are. So sometimes men will wear nip guards or pieces of tape over that area. Just to avoid the pain. Then there's a biff. This is a fall that does not lead to a trip to the ER. So something that's non-serious.
Unlike a biff slam.
Which, yeah, may be more serious. Then there's the face plant. Using your face to catch a fall, which is not recommended.
And then Angie's preferred way to deal with snot on the run.
The snot rocket, or farmer's blow. Basically, ejecting snot from your nose by closing one nostril with a finger and blowing forcefully out the other. Actually, I don't have very good success with this. I tend to, like, sniff and then spit, which I'm sure is annoying if you're running near me for any length of time, especially during allergy season.
Which is right now.
Oh, yeah.
So as you can see, there are a lot of terms that deal with injury and mishaps and annoyances that can happen while you run. Now we want to get into running slang, but before we do that, this would be a good time to tell you about this episode's sponsor, Mara.ai.
That's right. Smartphones now allow even casual runners to map their runs, create running playlists, and track their progress. However, taking advantage of these technologies has always meant stopping to look at your phone, which means losing motivation and momentum. Until now. Mara is a hands-free running assistant that uses voice recognition and the microphone in your earbuds to help you optimize your runs.
And the best part is, it's free.
That's right. You can ask questions about your speed, pace, location, duration of the run, or the weather. And you can have Mara play albums and playlists or podcasts from your music library.
And she talks in a cool Irish accent, unlike Angie.
Hey, I wouldn't be knocking anyone's voice. Mr. Frogman. Mara can now be connected to any of your Amazon Alexa-enabled devices, like the Amazon Echo, Dot, or Tap, which I don't use any of those yet, but that's okay.
I don't either.
So visit Mara.ai to download your free virtual running assistant on your iPhone or Amazon Alexa device today. Run with a sidekick. Make every mile count.
Thanks also to Jabra, another sponsor of ours. They make the Sport Pulse. It's a high-quality pair of earbuds with in-ear heart rate monitor. They're designed for runners who love to get in the zone, zone 2, that is. The other day, I was actually on a bike ride trying to keep it in zone 2, doing a little fat burning, and I was able to track my heart rate through my earbuds while listening to a podcast. The Jabra app would tell me if I needed to speed up or slow down, and I could actually control the volume of the podcast and music right there on the headphones. Don't even have to dig my phone out. Can life get any better? They're secure, comfortable, customizable. This is a great company. They've actually been doing drawings and free giveaways for those on their newsletter list who sign up through this link, jabra.com/MTA. And it does help our show when you visit our sponsors' websites. So for exclusive offers, giveaways, and product discounts, just head over to jabra.com/MTA.
So concerning pop culture, running pop culture, you might see the word FOMO, F-O-M-O.
And that's not unique just to running, but it is a very big part of running culture, and that is the fear of missing out. Friends signing up for races, going on to do new distances, having all sorts of fun, and you're stuck at home on the weekend. FOMO.
Stuck at home on the treadmill.
That's right. Another one is bucket list. People have all kinds of bucket list things, but specifically with running, it's a race or event that you really want to do in the future. You know, you'll hear somebody say, that's a bucket list for me. And I'm sure we all have them. Everyone's list would probably differ a little bit, but we all have those races on our bucket list that we can't wait to do someday.
I like the whole idea of a bucket list. You know, it gives you some big positive goals to work toward in your life.
Yeah, a lot of times people will have things they want to accomplish before they turn 30 or 40 or 50 or 60, you know, things like that. So I've never really taken the time to write down an official bucket list, but I definitely try to take advantage of opportunities that present themselves and realize that I probably regret the things that I don't do more than things that I do.
Well, you're doing pretty good. I mean, you had the goal of running a marathon in all 50 states, and you're kind of encroaching on that goal.
Well, I don't want to jinx myself, but yeah, it's coming along for sure. Another thing would be the post-race blues. And this is a sad, letdown, or directionless feeling that can happen after completing a big race that you've been training for.
It's a real thing. We've seen people deal with it.
It is. That's why I have a race in the calendar every 3 weeks or so. Then there's a bandit, someone who runs a race who hasn't registered. And of course, this is frowned upon.
And man, there sure is a lot of attention being brought to it recently too, with the Boston Marathon just getting over, and there's a whole website now. This guy has a blog dedicated to seeing if people have bandited races. And
well, people used to bandit Boston a lot. It was kind of a thing. But they really wouldn't run with bibs. They just would kind of jump into the race. But now it's gotten to the point where people steal other people's bib numbers. They make false ones. You know, like there's this whole basically cheating, you know, during the race.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, too, is if you're new to running, you might not realize at first just how much that is looked on as cheating.
That's right. Just ask any runner.
Yeah.
That's been running for any amount of time.
The purpose of this episode is to get you enculturated into the running world, not cause you to be a pariah among it.
Do not bandit races.
And we did do a whole episode, I think it's still on iTunes, called The Bizarre World of Race Cheaters. Remember that?
Yes. And since then, I mean, there's just been like dozens, he said recently, who've been brought to light. So it's something that still goes on a lot, sadly. Then there's something called a rabbit. And this is someone who goes out with the intention of setting a fast pace, but then often drops out or drops back. That's kind of an unofficial rabbit. Then there's a pace rabbit, and they are sanctioned by the race to pace elite runners, often for a certain distance. So, for example, during the London Marathon, I think they were wearing striped jerseys, and they will go out, and their job is to run a certain pace for a certain amount of time, and then they drop out of the race, and then usually another pace rabbit will take it from there. And that's back when Paula Radcliffe set the world record for the women's marathon, she used pace rabbits.
I didn't know that. So it's different than a pacer, because a pacer would stay the whole time and finish.
Yes, the pace group would be the whole way. But pace rabbits often will just have a certain stretch of the course that they're going to set the pace for. And since we were talking about elites, an elite is a professional runner who aspires or achieves race wins or Olympic qualification. It's another one of those very nebulous terms. I mean, there are elite runners who have not won marathons or set world records or gone to the Olympics. But what's considered elite is, you know, there's really no clear-cut definition necessarily.
You know, I think we might ought to throw in here, too, the word interloper. Because I remember watching the Boston Marathon live streaming. And then there's this guy who starts out, like, in the first 3 miles running up with the elite pack. But he's not an elite. And the commentators called him an interloper, which I thought was a fun word that I haven't heard in a long time.
And they said, in about 3 minutes, someone's going to hand him a piano.
Exactly. But yeah, people do that, you know, to get up there and run with the lead pack for their 10 minutes of fame or whatever. And then there's no way they can keep up. They just don't have the physiology to hang with the lead pack because they're obviously not elite runners.
And that would be when they'd run a definite positive split during their marathon.
Yeah. Which is, yeah, let's go and let's burn ourselves out the first 3 miles running a 5 minute mile and then struggle and suffer through and finish in the 20,000th place. Then there's the word chicked, which is a real word that runners sometimes use. It means a man who gets passed by a woman in a race.
And it's sometimes it really bothers men. I mean, I can't speak for the entire male population, but yeah, it's a thing.
And then there's geezered.
And that's a younger person who gets passed by an older person during a run or a race. So, I mean, we're using the term young and older very broadly. You could be 60, and if you're passed by an 80-year-old, then you've just been geezered. So it's just all very subjective.
And then there's DFL.
And we're going to say that means dead freaking last, although other words have been used, inserted for the freaking. But
this is a clean podcast.
That's right. We're keeping it clean. You can use your imagination, though. And there's another term called vitamin I, and that's kind of a slang term for ibuprofen. More in the ultra community, where people will go through all sorts of measures to keep themselves going and more comfortable during the long miles. This is not something that I recommend. I don't think taking ibuprofen during endurance training is a smart idea. So if you're having to take a lot of ibuprofen or take it on a regular basis, it probably means that you have an injury and something you need to address.
Yeah.
Then there's a streaker. That's someone who runs at least 1 mile a day for a certain period of time. Of course, to register an official running streak, you have to complete at least 365 days of running 1 mile per day.
Which you did, last year?
That's right. 2015 was the year of the streak. Then there's the term sponsored, and that is an athlete who is partially or totally supported by one or more companies. And again, sponsored can kind of be one of those terms that it's kind of unclear. Sometimes a person will still hold down their day job, you know, and have some more minor sponsors to help fund their running endeavors. And then, of course, there's usually the elite athletes who are able to devote all their time to training and running and may have, you know, a number of more high-powered sponsors. Then there's something called Ragnar. Ragnar is a long-distance team overnight running relay, and they have both road and trail events. I've been told they're a lot of fun. I think that's one of those things that's on my bucket list.
Nice.
And then there's an abbreviation OCR, which stands for obstacle course racing. Things like the Tough Mudder and Spartan races would be obstacle course races. Then another abbreviation, C25K. This is a term referring to couch to 5K, basically going from not running to completing your first 5K distance. Then there's something called the beer mile.
That's my favorite mile.
You've never done one, but this race consists of drinking one beer, 12 ounce, minimum of 5% alcohol by volume. And you have to consume one every quarter mile. Penalty laps are given for vomiting. So that doesn't sound very fun to me.
No, that doesn't matter.
I'd rather savor than guzzle.
Well, I was thinking of after you finish a marathon, you might have to walk another mile to get to the beer tent.
Yes.
But it's worth the walk.
I could get behind that beer mile, but yeah. Guzzling one every quarter mile is not sound fun.
No, I don't think so.
Then there's the runchies or rungry. These are two terms, a hungry sensation produced by running. And if you have the runchies and don't get food, this is followed by being rungry. A short temper if food is not quickly obtained.
Yes, we have seen Angie demonstrate that.
We have, or you have. I'm not admitting to anything.
Angie loses all control over her reasonable faculties.
There's something called a trackster, someone who runs mostly on the track or who follows track events very closely. We call the trackster. Then there's a ghost runner. This is someone real or imagined who is on your heels during a race or a run. So you feel like someone is purposely following you during a race or, you know, right on your heels. Keep looking back. You may have a ghost runner. Mm. Then there's runcrastination. This is putting off unwanted tasks to go for a run or to think about running. Something I've definitely been guilty of. And while you're doing some runcrastination, you may do some browsing. And this is searching for races via online sources like Marathon Guide, Running in the USA, Active.com, Ultra Sign Up, and it's a great way to spend your time if your attention span is short and not focused on work. Browsing for races.
All right, Angie, what's a run hole?
This is a term assigned to a runner who talks incessantly about running and neglects friends and family for training and races. Not necessarily something nice to be called.
Where did you get these words?
Oh, the wonderful internet. Then there's the runcation, much better than being a run hole. That is planning a vacation around a race. Now, if it's somewhere your family doesn't want to go, then you may be accused of all sorts of things. But we love runcations.
We do.
Then there's a term that I believe was coined by you, Trevor, the runner's grunt. Huh.
Yeah, that was proof that people actually listen to what I say. Because I come up with this new way to greet one another. If you're too tired to, like, wave, you can just grunt. And runners will understand. He's tired. He's probably on like mile 13, 14. He just wants to grunt. I'll grunt back. Friendly grunt.
Friendly grunt.
Like,
okay.
Like a warthog.
Well, if you're not sure whether you should wave or not, you know, sometimes it's kind of awkward, the waving or saying hi. You're not sure if the person will reciprocate. You can just kind of grunt. And then if they don't reciprocate, then it could just be interpreted as like you were grunting because you were tired or something like that. Is that, am I getting the right gist?
It's total nonsense.
Okay.
And so I said that on the podcast, and then like we got an email in a week or so after that some runner in New Zealand was running by and grunted at a person, and they stopped and were like, Marathon Training Academy podcast? Trevor, the runner's grunt? And they were both listeners and met through the runner's grunt.
That's amazing.
They fell in love, got married, and have three kids now.
Oh, no, he's not.
No. I came up with a... There's a few little...
few little terms you've coined over the years, like jaggers. That's a really, really old one. Probably most people have not heard that episode before.
Yeah. It's unexplainable and stabbing feeling in the knees.
I think you meant to say something else like daggers, but it came out jaggers.
Right. What else have I said? Release the Kraken. I said that on my recap episode in my first half marathon, and it really caught fire with our audience.
Yeah. Another one was stepping in... What was it?
Step into my warrior.
Yeah, that step into my warrior.
Yeah, that was a long time ago. That was, that's the mantra that I gave myself when I was out there building up to my first half marathon, pushing myself beyond my comfort zone, just having to bring it out there running. I stepped into it. I stepped into my warrior.
Then there's roadkill. This is a term for a person sitting or laying alongside a road or trail during a race. We've all seen them. Hopefully you've not been one, but...
Oh, I have. I have seen people that way.
Also known as carnage.
Yeah, it's sad. I mean, you never know what you're going to see, like, the last 5 miles of a marathon, especially if it's hot. I mean...
I remember the Lincoln Marathon, which was almost a year ago.
Yeah, it was in May.
And, yeah, the last few miles, there was just runners laid out everywhere.
Yeah, we even had some numbers on how many people had to be carried off in an ambulance that day, or...
Yeah, and for a small marathon, or, you know, small to mid-sized marathon, it was pretty high. Just a really unseasonably hot and humid day for spring.
So be careful out there, folks.
That's right. Don't be roadkill. Then there's mountain goading. This is walking or running uphill in a crouch position using your hands and feet to climb. So probably most used in trails, ultra marathons, things like that.
Well, you're saying it's so steep that you have to... Use your hands and feet?
Yeah, you know, for extra stability, you lean forward and kind of use your hands and feet to climb.
Wow.
Then there's something called bombing downhill, running downhill fast or in a nearly uncontrolled manner. This may end up with a face plant.
Make sure you turn on the song, Gonna Fly Now, you know, the Rocky song, right before you bomb. It'll make you go even faster.
Which is the goal, right? There's leapfrogging. This is continually passing and being passed by the same person or persons during a race. And this is very common. You'll often see the same people over and over again during your race, people about the same pace as you. So you're leapfrogging. Then there's wizard sticks, another name for trekking poles that are sometimes used in ultra marathons. And there's a term called hammer or drop the hammer. This is basically running hard at a challenging section or during the end of a run or race. So you just drop the hammer, or you really hammer out a section of the course, something like that. Hammer can also refer to the company Hammer Nutrition.
Yeah, so if you hear hammer gel, that's what that is.
Exactly. Another term that was new to me was sticky. This is covering your car with running-related stickers. You just have to go to the race expo, and you'll see the sticky people. Then there's a term called going Barkley. This is bushwhacking it through an unmarked section of land or trail.
Which is how you have to complete the Barkley marathons. An insane hard race in Tennessee.
Yes, there's actually a documentary about that. So if you're interested in a grueling and somewhat head-scratching race, you'd want to check that out.
So the race has given birth to a term for bushwhacking. It's good.
That's right. Then there's crop dusting. This is the act of passing someone on the trail or going around them on the road while simultaneously eking out the results of last night's 15-bean and pasta dinner.
What?
We've all been in... a race, and you just suddenly smell someone's gas really bad. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, it's strong, it's nasty, you want to get away from it. Well, that person was crop dusting.
Where do you find these words? Okay, well, we got a couple terms left here in our conversation about running slang. One word that you might hear us say just casually is maniac.
That's right. That's a term referring to someone who belongs to the Marathon Maniac Club. So to join, you have to run 2 marathons in 14 days or 3 in 90 days. So if someone calls you a maniac or crazy in running-related terms, it's supposed to be taken as a compliment.
Then there's that sister club, the Fanatics.
Yes, that's the term referring to someone who belongs to the Half Fanatics Club. So with that one, you have to run 2 half marathons within 14 days or 3 within 90 days as well. And then there's something called a double agent, where a person who belongs to both the Half Fanatics and Marathon Maniacs Club.
Yeah, and then there's 50 Staters.
That's right. There's a club called the 50 State Club, where to join, you have to have run a marathon in at least 10 states. And then, of course, the goal is to run a marathon in all 50 states.
There might even be a 7-continent club, too.
Probably is.
Yeah.
Then there's back-to-back marathon. That would mean running marathons on 2 consecutive weekends. Or you could do back-to-back half marathons or whatever, you know, type of race you were doing. And then there's double marathons. That would be running marathons on 2 consecutive days. And there's also things known as triples and quads. And, you know, you can let your imagination run wild with how many back-to-back marathons you could do.
Right. And there's a grand slam.
Exactly. That's completing all 4 of the most prestigious 100-mile races in 1 calendar year. So the races include Western States and California, the Vermont 100-miler, the Wasatch Front 100-miler in Utah, and Leadville Trail 100 in Colorado. And they're all within a fairly close time frame, like 4 or 5 months as well.
And as you can imagine, there's not a whole lot of people that do that. We've had a couple people on the show, though. Tracy Falbo, she was a slammer. And then we interviewed a couple years ago Ian Sharman, who won the Grand Slam and set the record. I think it still stands for the fastest Grand Slam. And then there are the Big 6 marathons, the World Marathon Majors.
Yeah, if you hear someone referring to the majors, they're probably referring to this collection of races. That would be the Tokyo Marathon, London Marathon, Boston, Berlin Marathon, Chicago, and the New York City Marathon.
It'd be fun to run all of those.
Yes, I'm slowly working on them.
Yeah, you've got Boston and Chicago down, and we're doing Berlin this fall.
And I keep entering the lotteries for New York and London. I think I need to start entering for Tokyo as well. It's hard to get into that one.
Well, that brings us to the end of our running terminology here. This episode, combined with part 1, really is, I think, the most extensive list of running terms anywhere on the internet.
I'm sure we missed a few, but had a lot.
Well, I hope you learned a lot from our 2-part series on running terminology you should know. Be sure to head over to the blog and check out the full list, what I think is the most complete list of running terms on the internet that Angie has compiled. And something special we want to do now is time travel through the magic of podcasting. A couple of days have lapsed. You may tell that my voice is slightly better. And Angie is now in New Jersey. I mean, she was sitting right here a second ago. Now she's in New Jersey on the eve of the New Jersey Marathon. And I'm going to call her because I heard it's going to be a rainy day, which is kind of a bummer. But that's what you have to deal with. Marathoning is an all-weather sport. So let's give her a quick call and see what her mindset is about tomorrow's race and see if she has any tips about running in the rain.
Hello.
So through the magic of podcast time travel, Angie is now in New Jersey, getting ready to run the New Jersey Marathon. Angie, how do you feel? Fantastic?
Are there any other choices besides fantastic? I feel like I've been in the car for 3 days, which I have been.
Yes. Wow, what a long drive, huh? All the way out to the East Coast, Jersey Shore.
Yes, it's very beautiful, though. Spring is happening out here, and very scenic drive, but yes. I feel a little bit brain dead.
Yeah, well, we won't keep you very long, because you're not that entertaining when you're brain dead.
No, I'm not. I'm not very entertaining anyway.
Well, we look forward to hearing all about the race when you get back. We'll do a recap, but here's what I want to ask you. There's a chance that it might start raining tomorrow morning, so a marathon's already hard, but when you're going to have to run and a downpour, it kind of puts a damper on things, huh? I mean, how do you handle that in your mind going into that tomorrow?
Well, first you have to reframe it. So everyone knows that I'm not a hot weather runner. And so I think, wow, well, it's going to rain and be cool, but at least it's not going to be 80 degrees.
That's a good reframe.
So, yeah, the rain will cool me off. And then I think you just have to realize at some point you're going to get wet and prepare for it as best you can. I have one of those big black trash bags, which I will put a hole in it for my head and arms and wear that over my running clothes up till the race starts so I can stay a little bit drier and warmer. And I have a hat I'll be wearing and, you know, just gonna go with it. Probably put some extra stuff on my feet to prevent blisters. And
exactly. That's what I'd be thinking about.
Yeah. So, you know, and everyone else will be out there in the same conditions. So it's not like I'll be having a dark cloud just following me along the course. So yeah, just try to enjoy it, even though it will be less than ideal probably.
Well, have a great run tomorrow, and I hope it doesn't rain, but if it does, I know you'll find a way to smile about it anyway. So
that's right.
Right
on.
I'll try. Okay. Get a good night's rest.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Well, there she goes, folks. Not knowing what tomorrow will bring. Will Angie indeed run her New Jersey Marathon with a smile on her face? Will she cross the finish line and seize her medal? Or will her travel-weary, disoriented brain cause her to run the wrong direction? Find out next time as we continue with this New Jersey Marathon saga. This has been an MTA production. More evidence that I have too much time on my hands. I should be out running. Thanks again to our two hosts, Angie and Trevor. Our producer, me. Our content coordinator, me. The sound technician, me. The guy who uploads it to iTunes. Once again, that's me. But more than anything, thanks to you, MTA fans, for being loyal listeners and for being so dang awesome. Take care out there. We always look forward to connecting with you on Facebook and everywhere else online. Head over to our website, get a free downloadable report called the Runner's Toolbox, 8 Essential Items for Preventing Injury. It's your gift when you sign up to our newsletter and stay in touch with us and what's going on at MTA. If you like this episode, make sure to check out part 1. I think it's episode 173. And stay tuned to find out what happens to Angie in New Jersey as the saga continues. And as always, I want to remind you, you do have what it takes to run a marathon and change your life. Well on my way, well on my way.